You pledged $25. Thank you. That is appreciated. Okay. I mean, yeah. You're a subscriber now. You gifted us. Thank you. And I was thinking, oh, I see your name. And now it's like, ooh, I see your name. 212-209-2950. I won't take note of it, don't worry. 212-209-2950. Match at least the $25, but better yet, give 100 less 50 cents, and we will give you an autographed copy of The Grey Friar, or, if you've already loved that, The Rift Walker. Have to be careful. The Rift Walker is the kind of thing that if you start talking too quickly and thinking about it in advance, could become, I'm talking about, you know, the rifting economy here at WBAI instead of the gifting economy. The Gift Walker. There's an idea. You can get arrested for that in the wrong department store. 212-209. Oh, I'm... Help me. 212-209-2950 is the number to call and pledge. I think I've got somewhere in here a little bit of pre-recorded pitching that I might share a little bit with you, assuming I can find it. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Oh, I actually have the audio from last year's Beyond Blackula event that we did. That was Leslie Banks, the late L.A. Banks, and Elia Dawn Johnson and Terrence Taylor, who put it together for us, and Linda Addison. It was a really, really cool lineup of four black writers, African-American writers, who are writing vampire stuff. And this is something that I would like to keep doing. This is a lot of fun. But, you know, again, it's sort of like your voting, your call tells us that this is something that's valuable to you. And, well, you don't make the call. I figure it's not that valuable to you. And therefore, well, you know, we'll switch to a different kind of a thing. But first, well, I think you do want it. I think you would enjoy it. 212-209-2950. When I look, I'm just looking through the recordings I've gotten right now. I'm looking through the spoken word. When I look at our production of The Council of Elrond, at our original broadcast before anybody else on this continent of Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy, Cat Valenti's musical performances, as well as her readings that we've broadcast, Jonathan Lethem, Connie Willis, Neil Gaiman, the amazing Karen Lord, Andy Duncan, Ursula K. Le Guin, blah, 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 blah. Okay? I think, you know, this is pretty cool stuff. Pat Cadigan. But, and later this month, Richard Bowes, who we were proud to put on the air on September 11th for his fabulous short story, There's a Hole in the City. And we're going to do something with that later this month again. We only had 1 hour the last time. We're going to do a longer time slot on that. And it well deserves it. But I'm just glancing at this. We gave you Until Forgiveness Comes by Kay Tempest Bradford. These are up-and-coming writers. And then we have the writers who are going to be the big, big deals in just a short time. And they're with us this morning. Susan and Clay Griffith. And it's almost 1:30. Griffith. WBAI had a worker named Sharon Griffiths, who I often worked with. And so I go, Griffiths, thinking of the Welsh Griffith. Griffiths is the way that she always liked to think of it. So I sometimes, especially when I see the name for the both of you, the Griffiths, that's like, no, it's Griffiths, singular. Both of you are singular, yet together.
Yes.
So we're going to go back to programming in just a little while after a brief break, but I don't want it to be with a sense of defeat. I don't want it to be with a sense of, geez, listeners, you didn't come through, because generally my experience is that you folks do come through. But hasn't yet happened this morning. So I will ask you again, 212-209-2950. And I'm going to put on a bit of music now. I'm going to ask our guests, The Highwayman, that's very moody and kind of appropriate to the feel of Vampire Empire, or yes. Would you, or Journey of the Sorcerer, which is more Hitchhikers?
I kind of like The Highwayman, but that's me.
I'm seeing nods.
Around. I concur.
Okay, fine. So we are going to go to, which version is this I have of The Highwayman? I've got the, I haven't labeled it. It could either be the Lorena McKennitt version or Phil Oakes. They both did versions, and they're exceedingly different. Although things shatter in the moonlight in either event. But, we're going to take that break now, but you know... Oh! Silly me. We're up to $100.
Excellent.
I didn't look. It's what we call tally lag. Tally lag means that, you know what? When the phone rings, the money doesn't come in instantaneously. Now, we do this the old traditional way. A human being answers the phone. They take your pledge. It takes a while. So I don't get the information immediately. So, okay, we've at least gotten to three digits. Instead of 10, now we've got 2. With the 1 before it. Okay, come on. As I put on this music, let's get another 100. Let's give away a copy. It's not selling. It's very particular in listener-sponsored radio. And it's the same thing on public radio as well. They don't sell the stuff. They give you a gift in exchange for the gift that you give them. Or did I mean we give you a gift in exchange for the gift you give us? Give us $99.50 and throw in another 50 cents for that. And you can get the Grey Friar or the Riftwalker. $150, you can get both, $175, and we will add the event, the audio of the event that occurred last night at the New York Review of Science Fiction readings with Clay Griffith and Susan Griffith and Margot Adler and with Ellen Kushner coming in to talk about Le Guin. I have to mention that Le Guin event as well at some point, but you know, in 3 hours, we can hardly talk about all the things I want to talk about in 3 hours, especially with the pitching. So you know what? Do me a favor. Pledge. 212-209-2950, and we will hear a Highwayman. Don't know which one, but it'll come riding. If this computer can go playing. Another reason why we need your help here at WBAI. Oh, that's a problem I have seen before. Yeah, it's when certain computers try to emulate other things. Doesn't mean we can't get it running. But we may need a little patience. Okay. Aha. Okay, let me close some of the things down. There we go. I've seen that error before. I do tech support in real life. Da, da, da. We could recite The Highwayman. I bet. I bet between the people in this room, we probably could do it.
It's been a while, but I probably could get some of it in.
Yeah, if we thought about it. Let's try it like, aha! It's the Lorena McKinnon version.
With the bow beneath the breast. Now he would watch and they kissed her. She heard the dead man say, look for me by the moonlight, watch for me by the moonlight. I come to thee by the moonlight, though hill should bar the way. She twisted her hands behind her, but all the knots came good. She writhed her hands till her fingers were wet with sweat and blood. They stretched and strained in the darkness, and the hours crawled by like years. To know when the stroke of midnight called on the stroke of midnight. The tip of her finger touched it, the trigger at least was hers. Were they deaf, they did not hear. Down the ribbon of moonlight, over the brow of the hill, the highwayman came riding, riding, riding. The redcoats looked to the priming, she stood up straight and still. Toddle out in the frosty silence, toddle out in the echoing night. Nearer came and nearer, her face was like a light. Her eyes grew wide for a moment, she drew in a last deep breath. Then her finger moved in the moonlight, her musket shot at the moonlight. Shattered her breast in the moonlight, and wound him with a dare. He turned his spur to the west, he did not know she stood. Bowed with her head on the musket, drenched with her own red blood. Not till the dawn he heard it, his face grew grey to hear. Ah, there's the landlord's daughter, the landlord's black-eyed daughter, had watched for him love in the moonlight, and died in the darkness there. And back he sped like a madman, shrieking a curse to the sky, with a white road smoking behind him, and his Arabia brandished high. Blood red were the spurs of the golden moon, wine red was his velvet coat. When they shot him down on the highway, down like a dog on the highway, and he lay in his blood on the highway, with a bunch of lace at his throat.
Larina McKinnitt, The Highwayman. Okay, well, we finally got that going after staring down that computer. You got to look them right in the mouse and then curse them out, and then they reboot. But sometimes it works, and it did this time. Wonderful, wonderful version of The Highwayman by Larina McKinnitt. And this is, by the way, WBAI in New York City. WBAI stands for We Beg at Intervals. At 99.5 FM, Pacifica Radio. And the program is Hour of the Wolf. My name is Jim Freund. This would be my normal time slot now. We'd be 15 minutes into the show. But actually, I have been on since Earthwatch would normally begin. I'm on this morning from midnight till 3. Robert Knight, who's usually on from midnight to 1:30, will be doing midnight to 3 next week. And after that, for the fun drive, all hell breaks loose. I don't know what the program director has in mind, but he likes to mix things up. And I have to say, that's a tactic that I approve of, even at my own cost, because it exposes listeners to different things. Now, we are going to continue talking with Susan and Clay Griffith, but I have to say thank you, because a couple of people pledged, and does it say that I can say their name on the air? Yes, it does. So, oh, I hope I get this name right. Roz Carneal, I believe, from Jersey. And I want to thank you. She pledged $99.50 and says that she still did not get a particular book by Ellen Datlow. If that is true, I thought you finally got that, Roz. If you did not, send an email to jim@ourwolf.com, HOURWOLF, and I will make sure that you get that book. Oh, I have to write that publicist. During the reading yesterday, I'm taking a look at my email, and I'm seeing somebody saying, you've probably never heard of the editor Ellen Datlow. No, she hasn't been on the air in like 2 months. She's done the show 20 times if she's done it once. And we're wondering if we can introduce you to for an interview. It's like, I'll call her up and let her deal with it. But, yeah, now, Roz, we're going to send you a copy of the great, I almost said The Highwayman. Yeah, when you do a pitch like I was just doing, you know, and you start just running off the top of your brain without going inside that brain, it's just shallow, it's just things spin off. The Grey Friar. From Vampire Empire by Susan and Clay Griffith, who by no small coincidence are with us this morning. Roz, I will be sending you a copy of that. We have them right here. Tim Jerome donated $75. Google him, folks. This is a way cool actor. He's worked with Ellen Kushner on The Witches of Lublin, but forget that. I saw him in Grand Hotel on Broadway. He was in the, the guy who gets shot role. Is that the Lionel Barrymore? Yeah, it's not the John Barrymore role. It's the Lionel Barrymore role that he did on Broadway, directed by Tommy Toon. Oh, that was great. Tim's done a lot of Broadway, and he's a wonderful performer. Has his own company right now with people like Hal Linden and stuff that are doing stuff and producing. And he gave us money. So should you. 212-209-2950. But... And by the way, our tally is $199.50. Okay, it's a start. It's a start. But, you know, we got to get rid of that 50 cents, which means that somebody else has to donate $99.50, and we'll give you a copy of one of the books from Vampire Empire. You see? Well, you heard the rest of it before, right? Just one more time, the phone number, then we're going to continue with the show. 212-209-2950. Would you guys like to take calls?
Sure. Absolutely.
Yeah, okay, good. Then, when you say absolutely, it helps if I've turned on your mic. Now I have. And if you, the listener, wish to call up and discuss not the pitching that you have heard this morning, but Vampire Empire and the work of Susan and Clay Griffith, which we've hardly begun to scratch the surface of. Because actually, this is sort of the first above-ground stuff you've done. But you've done a lot of other tie-ins and things like that.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Through the years. And it's actually a good body of work behind you, right?
Yeah, we started in comic books, or Clay started in comics originally. And then once he became established, I came in behind. And we've worked on various short stories, anthologies. We did another novel for Pinnacle Entertainment Group before we start this. So we have a wide variety.
Yeah, we've probably the most familiar thing we've done is The Tick. Many people remember The Tick. We don't claim to invent The Tick. That was Ben Edlund. But I was hired originally to write the two spinoff books, The Man-Eating Cow and Paul the Samurai.
I loved The Tick. It was sick.
It was great. It was great. And we've done The Tick off and on for the last decade or two.
And I liked it both animated and mm-hmm. live action, yep. I have to say, and the comic. And it's just a lot of fun.
Yeah, so that was our meal ticket for a while. And and since we've got other graphic novels, we've, as you mentioned earlier, we've got one... Gosh, I don't know what. A couple of things coming out in December. We have an issue of A Vincent Price Presents, which we've done a couple of issues of. We've got an Alan Quatermain book coming out based on the old H. Rider Haggard character.
I love Alan Quatermain. Before Doctor Who, you know, those Quatermain and Quatermass.
Yeah.
You know, they're both that similar kind of adventure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that now that makes perfect sense. You know, yeah. Knowing Vampire Empire, knowing that you've done that, it just clicks so perfectly.
Susan comes from pulps. We both love the pulps. I think I come from a much deeper background in historical adventure. That's my thing. Mm-hmm. Quatermain and... the Talbot Mundy and all those things. Those were my
all own. Really wonderful stuff. Yeah, yeah. And it all can be tasted slightly in the background
mm-hmm.
of Vampire
oh,
Empire.
Yeah,
it's a
absolutely.
Lovely flavor. It's
yeah,
a, yeah,
it's all there.
The telephone number to speak with Susan and Clay Griffith is 212-209-2900. You want to give money? It's 2950. Maybe it should make people call the first and then we let you on to the second. But I'm not going to play that game right now. We do have calls coming in. So we'll give it a try. No. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning.
Good morning, Robert.
How art thou?
I art.
I wish.
Art.
Unfortunately... Well, sometimes you forget and sometimes you don't remember, which is two different things, and I missed your first hour and a half. However, I got you right in the middle of Lorena McKennitt.
And you know how painful that can be.
No, well, what a version. I must say, I've always loved the Phil Oakes version, but her version, I don't know, I think...
Is that moody or what?
Yes, it's very moody. I was expecting not a fiddle, but a bagpipe in her version. Okay, but that's musical difference. Mr. Griffith.
Yes.
You say you're a fan of the pulps and historicals.
Mm-hmm.
Were you ever a fan of Robert E. Howard's historical adventures?
I love Robert E. Howard. I admit that I'm primarily a fan of his more well-known Conan called Solomon Kane, which I guess would be historical.
Bran McMorn, yes.
Bran McMorn I've read as well. I can't say I've read a lot of his... His other historical works, you know, he's written westerns. He wrote, you know, typical sort of
Jalkin stories, of course,
right.
Which of course are the comic westerns.
Yeah.
The book that you should read.
What's that?
Is called Sword Woman and Other Historicals. Now, this contains.
Oh, okay.
This contains most, if not all, of the historicals that he did, including a number of fragments. But the ones that I would really recommend are Sowers of the Thunder.
Okay.
Shadow of the Vulture, which is the story of the Siege of Vienna in 1529.
Oh, awesome.
Lord of Samarkand, which is his take on Tamerlane.
I've actually read that one.
And, I mean, and of course, The Lion of Tiberius. But, of course, he also has The Sword Woman, which is his take on... Well, some people think Dark Agnes was really Joan of Arc, but Howard was a big fan of Jirel, as you know, of Girelle of Juarez, the C.O. Moore character. But I think of it, I think, you know, a lot of people say that
she was a great swashbuckler.
Yeah, how a lot of people, and I'm one of these, think that if had Howard lived, you know how, you know, he tragically died when he was 30, took his own life. Had Howard lived, he was getting very tired of Conan. He was getting very tired of Cull. One of the things that he wanted to be was a regionalist of the Southwest. He wanted to be what August Derleth was, maybe to the Midwest. He had really done a lot of research into Texas history. He had been researching the Texas gunfighters and the Texas feudists. And he really wanted to become an American historical writer. And I really believe that, because some people say that he was getting better as he went ahead in life. And I wanted to know your thoughts.
Well, I can't claim to know much about his intentions. I mean, I can certainly see that happening in terms of the maturation of a writer in the 1930s. As great as we hold Conan and Cull and things like that now, they were not quite boys' adventure because they were a little racy for boys, but I mean, they weren't mainstream fiction. So if you wanted to be a well-respected writer, you would certainly move into more mainstream historical writing, and he had the chops for it. He certainly could have done it.
Clay, if I can call you that, the problem was he couldn't sell his historicals, not many of them. Mm-hmm. He was selling for what he could get the money for. He was selling to Weird Tales to Farnsworth Wright, and he tried to sell historicals to Oriental Stories and Oriental Adventures, but most of them wouldn't take them in his lifetime. It was only after he died that a lot of the historicals were published, obviously. And, you know, you obviously have to sell where the money is, at least in those days.
Oh, yeah.
Let me get back to your work.
Yes, and also we'll want to move on.
Yes. Have you and Susan done research into traditional vampire lore, that is, traditional tales from around the world involving vampires?
We have done some. We can't claim to be the end-all and be-all of sort of folk vampire tales around the world. We collected many and attempted to weave elements of them into our mythology, which is a little bit different from standard vampire mythology. But, I certainly don't claim to be an encyclopedia of vampirism. But the one
who's been doing the study is Margot Adler.
Yes, I know. Yeah. She actually told me a while back.
And I may actually play a little snippet of last night's, I think the intro that she did at the very beginning rather than her lecture later, but her intro.
Where she categorized.
Where she did the categories before she did her thing on vampires and power. Because that was only about 3 minutes, her intro, and it was very good.
Just one last thing. Do you have an email people can get in touch with you? I have a whole plethora of stuff in my collection as a folklore individual that I am.
Oh, okay.
And I'd like to share.
Sure.
I have dozens and dozens and dozens of stories, especially from non-European traditions, North and South America, Far East, Sub-Saharan Africa, of vampiric individuals and creatures that you might like to know about.
We have a blog, and you can contact us there. And I'm trying to remember what it is off the top of my head. It's Clay and Susan. Do you know what it is?
I think it's Clay and Susan Griffith.
blogspot.com.
Oh, yeah. Exactly. Just Google Clay and Susan Griffith.
I did my
Thank
research.
You. He knows it better than I do. Google Clay and Susan blog. And
you know how many times I wrote your bio in the last 2 weeks?
you can
and I make sure that I get these things
and
right.
You spell Griffith how?
Griffith.
Are you Welsh?
At one time we were, and were kicked out of that country.
As I was saying earlier, but you weren't listening earlier, like Sharon Griffiths.
Oh, yes, yes.
G-R-Y, if they allowed a Y, F-F-D-S, you know, just
well, I've always said, Clay, that God invented Welsh on the ninth day of creation. He was in a lousy mood because he threw up 100 letters and said, "Let there be Welsh."
Yeah. They were on Torchwood. The most recent thing, they were doing comparisons between like some cesspools in New Jersey and Wales. It was really nasty. I liked
actually,
it.
Actually, I love the Wales. Have you two been to Wales?
No, but we...
It's a lovely place.
We hope to go next year,
I've been to
I think.
Three dolphins.
It's a lovely place. Instead of the line... All right, so if I look you up on the net, you'll have a blog.
Yes,
we can contact you because
absolutely
I have tons.
It's
of
the first hit you'll get if you type in Susan Griffiths and Clay Griffiths. Yeah,
I hope so.
All right, take care.
Thank you.
Take care. Thank you.
Okay, if you'd like to pledge to WBAI, and it is by the way 2 a.m. on WBAI New York. The telephone number to pledge is 212-209-2950, and to speak to Susan and Clay 212-209-2900. But I was wondering, let me ask you a question. Then, do you want to read a little, Clay?
Sure, I'd be happy to.
Okay, but the question that I had was actually one that our professor Robert had touched. He is a professor.
Oh, excellent.
So he's CUNY professor, a retired CUNY professor. So it's
wonderful
on folklore and music and stuff. So I'm not saying that sarcastically, but one of the questions that I basically had is defining vampires. You know, it is so different. Terence Taylor, when he first saw Being Human, which is another the British version, which is another television show that I really, really enjoy.
I did too.
Yeah, he was just saying, why isn't Mitchell just evaporating? All he has to do is put on sunglasses and walk in the sunlight. You know, he winces a little. You know, at least Spike greases his car windshield and stuff like that. And, you know, in other places, they twinkle.
We won't speak much of that.
They have
their place. I'm not saying that, but we're more of the traditional.
That place is junior high in the locker room. But OMG. But the thing is that there are the Buffy vampires evaporate, others bleed out, yours actually die like creatures.
Well, I mean, we played with the vampire mythology. We've made our vampires a little bit different, just to make them a little bit more unique. We've made them a different species, a subspecies.
They're not the undead.
They're not the undead. And so some of those myths that humans have held dear, we've been trying to explain logically within the real world as to why they would behave or humans would have believed that about them. So we've tried to play with some of that mythology. Like with ours, you know, the reason they've conquered the North is because the North is colder. They're not going to burn up in the sun. They're basically going to shut down when it gets too hot. So they prefer to stay within those northern climes, and that's why it enabled the humans to flee to the equators.
Or come out at night.
Yeah. So, I mean, but we've sort of played with that kind of mythology where we're giving some of the – some explanation to some of that mythology that has stood the test of time.
Mm-hmm.
Our premise is our vampires are – living creatures, and humans have built myths around these things that have always existed in different, as the previous caller was talking about, different vampire myths from around the world. Our explanation is these creatures exist everywhere in some minor differential form, everywhere around the globe, and different cultures have explained them in different ways. Ultimately, they're vampires, whether they're called ghouls or
Djinns
or zombies or whatever, they're vampires. The reason you, in Western mythology, you have to drive a stake through their heart or cut off their head is because in our world, their senses are preternatural in terms of sight, smell, taste. They have a blunted sense of touch. They don't feel much. So they don't take damage, or they take damage if you shoot them or stab them, but they don't go into shock the way a human would if you stab them or shot them. They don't really feel it. And so you have to do massive amounts of damage to kill them. That's why if you do destroy their heart, they die, because they're just a living creature. But you've got to really tear them up before they'll fall. So we try, as Susan said, we took the myth of the vampires and tried to say, okay, here's what our creatures are. Why? What's the explanation for this mythology that would have come about?
Okay, and I'm sorry. I was queuing something up because I was rethinking where we were going to go. And what I was thinking is, before you read, maybe it would be good to have Margot's introduction to you.
Sure.
From last night. And let's listen to that right now. And then you will read for us, as you did last night. But I'm also going to tell people that, you know what, you're not going to hear this whole thing on the air. I mean, Margot then did a whole lecture, and there was the reading and all that. The only way you're going to get that is with a $175 pledge. For that pledge, you will get both books from Vampire Empire by Clay and Susan Griffith, and you will also get the audio of the event last night, including Adler's entire rap. But here is a little taste of how at the beginning of the evening she introduced them.
Very non-SF, non-other kinds of people, they say, there are 185 vampire novels? That's what they say. And I say, actually, there are some bibliographies, some of which have come out 5-10 years ago, and they have 5,000 or more vampire novels in them, you know? So I think what I find so fascinating, and later I'll tell you how this all happened, but I'm not going to tell you that now, but I think what I find most fascinating about the genre is that it's really so many different genres within the genre. So for example, I'm going to give you my 5-minute tour through vampire genres. So here it is. Historical, Chelsea Quinn Yarbrough, Terrence Taylor, Midnight Gardenium by Sarah Jane Stratford, and millions of others. Detective, Tanya Huff, P.N. Elrod, Barbara Hambly, Charles Houston, the Joe Pitt novels, some of which are fabulous, all in a very dystopian noir New York. Half of one book takes place on the A train. Porn, near porn, Anita Blake. I stopped at book 10, Too Much Torture in S&M for my taste. And the late L.A. Banks, Vampire Huntress Season. Then teen nerd fun. Pimply vampires such as Kimberly Pauly Sucks to Be Me. And the sequel, Still Sucks to Be Me. And Brian Meals, Suck It Up. And Fat Vampire by Adam Rex. Then there's fun and comedy for older people. The comedy novels of Christopher Moore, Bloodsucking Fiends, A Love Story, and all of the sequels. Vamped, and many other comic novels. Molly Harper's Nice Girl series, which is fun. Davidson's Undead series, which is pretty thin. Two, Hogwarts for Vampires, or Vampires at School. Twilight, at least in part. Vampire Academy. Claudia Gray's Evernight series, Blue Bloods, which is basically Upper East Side Gossip Girls plus vampires. It really is. Imagine that this is a novel that basically says that all the people who came over on the Mayflower were really, and that's why there's social x-rays going to these Upper East Side schools. It's very funny. Vampire Diaries, of course, even House of Night, but that also can be Wiccan and magical, and of course, magical. Jim Butcher has some vampire books. Then there's local, like Southern Vampire Series, Charlene Harris and True Blood, New England Vampire Series by Inanna Arthon, the Chicagoland Vampire Series with Its Real Love of Chicago by Chloe Neal. Then we get vampires as simply a different species, Whitley Strieber's 3 vampire novels, and The Strange and Wonderful, A Delicate Dependency by Michael Talbot. Gothic, of course, Dracula, Camilla, pretty much all of Anne Rice, Kim Newman, possibly The Historian by Kosova. And then what I would call pure horror, and I'm just going to mention 2 recent ones, The Passage and The Strain. And I have to say that personally, I really don't like vampires who aren't sentient and have no thoughts. And so these 2 books really did not do anything for me, I have to admit. Literary vampire novels, everything from The Society of S and the subsequent novels, A Delicate Dependency again, A Discovery of Witches by Harkness, Let the Right One In, Octavia Butler's Fledgling, Poppy Z. Bright's masterpiece, Lost Souls. Then there's the presidential thriller, Christopher Farnsworth and his book Blood Oath and the sequel, The President's Vampire. Then there's romance. Some of the romance, I'm going to admit, grates on my soul. I'm going to admit, I read 9 books of the Argeneaux Vampire series by Lindsay Sands, mainly because it's a very Jane Austen-like attempt of the vampire mom, Marguerite, to marry off her kids. I was waiting till she found her own life partner, which she finally does in book 9, then I could leave. But oh my God, the sex scenes. Everyone is totally perfect. He fills her. They have perfectly timed mutual orgasms because they're in each other's minds. It's totally perfect. I began skipping the 2 or 3 sex scenes per book because they were all the same and bore no resemblance to anything me and most of my friends had ever experienced. The Janine Frost series, Halfway to the Grave, has a similar problem. J.R. Ward, The Black Dagger Brotherhood, same thing. On the other hand, Nora Roberts' Circle Trilogy is beautiful, beautiful mix of Celtic, magical, romantic, adventure, time travel. I was truly sad when the third book ended. Then there are kid books like Vladimir Todd's Cirque du Freak. There are, of course, the mashups like Emma and the Vampires. I hated them all. And then there are attempts to really give an alternative retelling like Karen Essex's wonderful Dracula in Love, quite literary, a feminist retelling where Dracula is, of course, the hero and the villains are, you guessed it, the male medical establishment. Truly unique books that don't fit in anywhere, like Fever Dream by George R.R. Martin, Peeps by Westerfield, Night Watch and Day Watch, which takes place in post-Soviet Russia by Sergei Lunyanenko, Vamped, etc. Anyway, it goes on and on and on. So I'm not even sure what category I would put The Grey Friar and The Riftwalker. Certainly adventure, steampunk, really good romance, alternate universe, and something else that I think all of my favorite vampire novels have. It's something that I'm calling, for want of a better term, and I realize this is a really horrible term, the X-Men factor. Now, it has nothing to do with the X-Men, but I think it's a way to talk to people who haven't read a lot of SF, because I also call it the love of the persecuted other. Some of the best, my favorite SF, is always about that stranger in a strange land, the persecuted other, the person who's not at home in his own society. And in Vampire Empire, you have 2 societies that have both good and evil in them. Neither one is one we would find comfortable to live in. And the 2 souls who twine together from different clans, societies, and species and make their world together is a story as old as Romeo and Juliet or The Dispossessed, where the anarchist comes down to Earth and finds it really weird. Versions of the persecuted other are all over SF and all over vampire fiction, and full confession, it's my main fantasy. And has always been. And I think that's my favorite thing about Vampire Empire. And so now I'm going to introduce them, because here they are. So they've written and published together for more than a decade. Their most recent series is Vampire Empire, which you have the chance to buy, the first 2 of a trilogy. There are steampunk elements and adventure elements. The first book was released by Peer Books to critical acclaim, and it really is wonderful. Their credits include 3 books for Bantam Doubleday Dell in the mid-1990s, another for Pinnacle Entertainment in 2002. They've done numerous short stories, they've been in anthologies, they've also written scripts for television and published graphic novels. They have their own website, which is clayandsusangriffithblogspot.com, and Spike is reading the audiobooks of their Vampire Empire. So you might want to also get the audiobooks if you're a Spike fan like
Margo, you just want to meet James Marsters.
Ado,
we know it. We know
Clay
it.
And Susan Griffin.
Well, here, that was last night. This is tonight here on Hour of the Wolf. Why is this not? Hold on. I don't know. I turn down the potentiometer, and yet they keep talking. Well, that's vampirism for you. And that was only the intro. I mean, the second piece that she did in the second half, I thought, was simply to talk the way that she does. Amazing.
Mm. I agree. It was great. It was a wonderful night.
Yeah.
Listening to her. I don't know about listening to us, but listening to her was
great. No, it was an excellent night overall in the Q&A that happened. We don't usually do Q&A but I thought that it was appropriate, and it went very well. Mm-hmm. And, you know, she knows how to interview.
Yes, she does.
Oh, yes.
A lot of good questions, so we were very, very happy with that.
Before Clay, I believe, is going to read for us next. Yes. Susan read for us a little earlier, and now it's Clay's turn. But before we do that, let me just remind you that this morning is being paid for by you, the listener, or at least it should be. And we have premiums, and those premiums are that if you donate $99.5, that's just 50 cents under $100, as in 99.5 FM, you can get a copy of The Grey Friar or The Riftwalker. If you do not specify, it will be The Grey Friar, because that's the first book in the Vampire Empire. I'm not going to say trilogy, because we don't know where this may end up going. We know there's at least a third book. But I'm correct, am I not? And that's not necessarily it.
Well, we hope not. I mean, we would love to continue with this particular world, because there's so much that we haven't touched on.
Yeah, it's
so
very rich.
Right. So yeah. Hopefully, Pyre.
We haven't gotten to Asia.
Not yet. We haven't gone to the Americas. We you know, all these places have been mentioned, and you know, we've certainly given some ideas of what's going on over there.
Yeah, but we know something about America because of Senator Clark.
Exactly. But I would love the ability to go and tell a story over there and give us a sample of what's going on in Panama, where the Americans have now been forced to relocate to, and how that has changed and what it's like on the frontier. So there's all these great little places for us to tell more stories within that world, and we want that opportunity. But there's definitely three books, and the third one is we're working on now, and hopefully will be in the publisher's hand by the end of the year, and hopefully will be in the reader's hand by next year, probably fall.
In time for DragonCon.
In time for DragonCon. But yeah. I would love, and hopefully the sales and the reviews, the great reviews that we're getting, will give the
they've
you know,
been amazing reviews
us.
And well deserved.
Absolutely, thank you.
And if you, the listener, want to make a review of the book, well, you have to read it. And the best way to do that is by making a donation to WBAI. $99.50 will give you a copy of The Grey Friar or The Riftwalker. $150 will bring you the first two books in the Vampire Empire umphology, and the umpteenology. No, I like umphology. And it's got that umph to it. And for another $25 beyond that, grand total of $175, we will gift you with the entire event that you just heard a little piece of last night, including Adler's entire speech on vampirism and power, which was so fascinating, so very, so dead on, no pun intended. While you listen to Clay read, I would also like you to call 212-209-2950. I'm going to turn down the pots on the telephone so it doesn't disturb the reading, because I just know those phones are going to ring. So, Clay, is there any
setup?
Yeah.
Yeah, I guess a small one. The bit I'm going to read takes place in London, which, of course, is the capital of the greatest of the vampire clans. Our main character, Adela, is in the hands of that clan, and she is, in this bit, conversing with Gareth, Prince Gareth, who is the eldest son of the king of the British clan. And Gareth is a little bit different from the average vampire, although Adela doesn't know that yet. He has come to get her from her prison in the Tower of London to show her something. So this is the conversation they have in London. Gareth strode out of the dilapidated main gate and into the city. Adela followed his black frock coat as his long legs ate up the cobblestone streets and muddy lanes. Occasionally he turned to check on her, but she was always a few steps behind. maintaining a look of bland detachment, although she was busy studying the street layout. Adela caught sight of a dark shape as it swooped between crumbling buildings and caught hold of a rooftop. It was Flay. Gareth saw the lurking war chief, too. A small chuckle escaped the prince as he said over his shoulder, "Cesare's afraid you might escape from me." Adela felt the blade resting hard against her stomach. Hilarious. Gareth laughed again and openly stared up at Flay as they passed beneath the vampire's perch. Several more times over the course of the silent stroll, Flay appeared outlined against the bright blue sky like a gargoyle. Eventually, Gareth and Adela passed between two wrought iron gates and stood before a large domed building with a great colonnaded portico. Gareth asked, "Do you recognize this place?" "Should I?" Adela replied sharply. "It's the British Museum, my home in London." I imagine it is more pleasant than the crypt or hole in the ground where you lived before." Gareth smirked at her retort with real amusement, his angular face softening. The thought of a vampire making its nest in this great museum chilled Adela. This was a place that had been dedicated to preserving the valuable past and learning from it, a uniquely human activity that the vampires could never understand. She asked, "Do you intend to hold me here?" "You're welcome to stay here," Gareth replied very quickly, then added, "but you're also free to keep your rooms in the tower. Come." Adela followed his tall, straight back along the gravel walk. Flay drifted high overhead as Gareth pushed open the massive bronze door, stepped aside for Adela to enter, and then closed the door behind them. His voice echoed in the empty chamber. "Don't worry about Flay. She won't dare enter. To violate my rights would mean her death. Not even Cesare could save her." Gareth stretched out his arms in a shaft of sunlight. He looked around the vast entryway with something like pride. "Come, walk with me. I have questions." Adela stood rooted to the floor. Was this it? Would he begin the interrogation now? Gareth pointed to his right like a tour guide. The books were through there once. Rooms full of them. Quite amazing. "I didn't realize you had created so many." The vampire seemed apologetic suddenly. "They're gone now, I fear." "Yes, I know. Your kind destroyed them all." "We did," he nodded gravely. "But not completely. Many of them were used later by humans for fire. Still, no matter. There are other things I want to show you and ask you about. I have no intention of telling you anything. Ask your brother. I'm capable of prodigious silence." The vampire looked disappointed, then brightened. "And I told you, I have no interest in the affairs of your state, or your spies, or the numbers of your ships or soldiers." Footfalls rang in the emptiness as Adela followed Gareth through the dim, chaotic galleries. She stepped carefully through the detritus of ancient societies, as well as the remnants of furniture and fixtures from the time of the Great Killing. When their path was blocked by toppled and smashed statuary, Gareth reached back to assist her, but she ignored his outstretched hands. He sighed softly, but respected her independence. Great, mute heads and muscled arms and torsos of marble lay useless all around them. From cracked wooden panels and terracotta vessels stared faces of people from distant lands, many now parts of Equatoria and Adela's future subjects. There were dusty clumps of shredded tapestries and portraits. Bronze helmets and weapons stood in piles. The princess noted several gleaming daggers that would serve her, but she didn't dare stop. They paused before a great winged lion, human-headed, with a long, curly beard. "Magnificent," Gareth ran his hand slowly along its massive stone flank. "But why make such a thing?" "I understand making tools and weapons. There's a purpose in it. but this. It must have taken enormous effort. To what end? Adela didn't answer. Was he actually interested in human culture? He seemed sincere, but it was difficult for her to believe a vampire could pretend so well. It just wasn't in them. It would be like a cat feigning interest in intricate needlework techniques for the ultimate goal of getting its paws on the ball of yarn. Gareth didn't seem disturbed by her silence. The prince had too many questions to worry about one. He quickly cut through another doorway with Adela in his wake. As they stepped around an enormous stone head face down on the floor, Gareth pointed up at a colossal Egyptian figure of a man, red granite trunk and head partially sheared off. "There," he said. "See? That is extraordinary. Why make it so large?" Adela recognized the monument instantly, an ancient pharaoh of her homeland, wasted here in London. It had no power in this place. It should be standing in Victoria Palace in Alexandria. After all, her father was the heir to the pharaohs, as was she. Gareth asked, "What was his name? Do you know?" "Rameses." Adela couldn't help herself. There was a certain amount of family pride involved. "He was the greatest ruler of his time, one of the greatest of all time, the king of Egypt." "Rameses was from Egypt," Gareth mused. "Why is his statue here? Did the British hold him in esteem? Did he rule here too?" "No, he's long dead. When Rameses ruled, Britain was peopled with savages, like now. But when the British were civilized, they found the statue in Egypt and brought it here. All this material was brought here by Englishmen with an interest in mankind." "The Egyptians, then, had become savages." Adela didn't answer. She stared at the immortal statue. Then she noticed on the stone pedestal in faded red letters, perhaps even scrawled in blood many years ago, were the words, "Look on my works, ye mighty," and despair. How odd, how sad, and true. "How old are you?" Adela suddenly asked Gareth. "What? How old are you? Do vampires live forever?" She started to touch the granite base of the great pharaoh, but hesitated. "Were you alive when he was alive?" "Of course not. The statue is 3,000 years old. There are no vampires alive from his time." "How could you possibly know how old he is?" Adela's eyes fell upon a mildewing label posted on the stone pedestal. With the only legible information being a date listed for the Colossus. "You can read," Gareth replied defensively. "We know more about your history than you suspect. We know more about you than you do about us. Humans think that vampires are their own dead, risen to life. It's grotesquely vain." "Don't change the subject," Adela retorted. "Only ignorant people believe that fairy tale about the undead. We know what you are. Parasites. And I know your kind couldn't care less about human culture or history. Your brother Cesare made that clear. He wouldn't know Suleiman the Magnificent or Julius Caesar if he fed off of them. But you're different, aren't you? You can read, even though your kind holds reading and writing in great disdain. Cesare said so." "Perhaps you shouldn't believe everything Cesare says." Adela raised a bemused eyebrow. "I wonder what your brother would think if he knew the heir to the clan could read human writing. That doesn't sound like proper behavior for a king of vampires." Gareth stared at her for the first time with a look that scared her. Then he turned away, the long hem of his frock coat snapping with the movement. He strode off through the collapsed funerary accoutrements, heels clicking loudly in the silence. Adela followed as the prince kicked his way through mummies without care. "Wait," Adela called out. "I won't use it against you." Gareth kept walking. "Listen to me," she grabbed his arm. "Didn't you bring me here to talk?" Gareth spun around in a blur, his face angry at first, but quickly subsiding to mere annoyance. "Very well. You're right. I can read some of your languages. I do have an interest in your culture. And yes, there may be very few of my people who share my interest. Well, none, most likely. We hold writing in disdain, as we do all things your kind has made. Art, agriculture, cities, weapons, they're nothing to us." "You mean like the clothes you wear?" Gareth heard the sarcastic edge to her question. "We use your clothes because your skin is too fragile to wear." Despite the savage words, his tone was melancholy. He knelt and dug into a pile of detritus, lifting a tiny figurine made of translucent alabaster. Gareth rolled the lustrous white object along the tips of his long fingers with a tenderness that surprised Adela. He said, "We make nothing. We create nothing." He pushed his other hand deep into a mound of shattered clay fragments. "And we leave nothing behind." The vampire stood and tossed the figurine back into the waste pile. "We are parasites, which is fortunate for you. It would have taken little effort to make your kind extinct. But we need you to survive." "Yes, but we don't need you." Gareth inclined his head graciously. "Among our greater failings, vampires are notoriously slow to appreciate irony. We've grown lazy and decadent. No desire to go back to living in crypts and holes in the ground. We like houses and clothes, not enough to make them, but enough to want slaves who will make them. And we like having our meals that don't require hunting or danger. It seems that we aren't even good parasites anymore." "So you don't care about the survival of your kind?" Adela's voice was incredulous, perhaps slightly sarcastic. The prince wiped dust from his hands. "I think only the valuable should survive. It remains to be seen where my kind falls. I'll take you back." Adela watched his lonely figure as it disappeared among the toppled magnificence of ancient humanity. Then she stooped to recover the precious figurine. It was a washabti. In ancient times, they were placed in the tombs to be vessels where the wandering souls of the dead could rest. She blew the dust off its lustrous surface and followed Gareth.
You've been listening to a segment from The Grey Friar by Susan Griffith and Clay Griffith. That was Clay Griffith reading here over WBAI in New York. That's volume one of Vampire Empire. And here, in keeping with the steampunky part of the works, is a song appropriate by Natalie Merchant.
I once loved a sailor.
Well, at least it's an airship song.
Me, but he was not a sailor who sailed on the wide blue sea. He sailed in an airship, sailed like a bird on the wing. And every evening at midnight, he would come to my window and sing, "Come take a trip in my airship, come sail away to the stars. We'll travel to Venus, we'll sail away to Mars. No one will see while we're kissing, no one will know as we swoon. So come take a trip in my airship, and we'll visit the man in the moon." Sailing away from the clouds, we passed through the milky white way, while idly drifting, watching the clouds, he asked if I'd name the day. Just by the dipper I gave him my heart, the sun shone on our honeymoon. We swore to each other we never would part, and we teach all the babies this tune. Come take a trip in my airship,
come sail away to the stars.
We'll travel to Venus,
we'll
This is a song that will stay in your head, as Susan Griffith was just saying. And something that also needs to stay in your head, the phone number here at WBAI to pledge 212-209-2950. $25 will make you a subscriber to WBAI. For $99.50 here at 99.5 FM, you can get a copy, an autographed copy of the book from which you just heard Clay Griffith, and before that, Susan Griffith reading in their collaboration of The Grey Friar, the first book in the Vampire Empire series. The second book is also available to you under those same conditions at $99.50. But if you want both, hey, a gift to WBAI of $150 will get you both. But if you're going to do that, go all the way. $175 will not only make us very, very pleased, but in thanks, we will send you the recording of the events last night at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings, which included conversation and readings by Susan and Clay, and commentary on vampire fiction by Margot Adler. It was a cool evening, and I'm sorry that you weren't there, but hey, you can make up for it by giving a nice gift to WBAI, and we will return that thanks by sending you all these goodies. And goodies they are. I love that scene, Clay and Susan, in the British Library. Mm-hmm. I love the language about, you know, what is the description? The cat. It would be like a cat trying to...
Oh, a cat feigning interest in needlework to get yarn.
Yeah. This is so evocative. And it's such a rich... metaphor, and also the idea that I've done very, very little traveling in my life, but one place I got to was London.
Yes.
For 10 days, and a day of that was right where that scene takes place.
We spent time in London as well. In fact, we were part of the inspiration for the book. We were married in Scotland, and married at Greyfriars Kirk in Edinburgh, from which we get the name the Greyfriar.
Okay. And then mentioned that.
That's yeah, as part of the trip, we went to London afterwards and wandered the British Museum. So,
yeah.
Often.
I mean, basically go to London, British Museum, theater.
Mm-hmm.
That's a good start. And don't bother with 221B Baker Street. It's just,
disappointing.
But Dickens' house.
Oh, no, we didn't go.
Oh, yeah. Dickens' apartment. Yeah. He had apartments in London where he did theater and stuff in a place about the size of this control room.
Hmm.
That was a lot of fun. And his manuscripts lying around and stuff.
We're thinking of going back, so we'll have to add that to the, list.
Yeah, add Dickens' flats or apartments.
Yeah. Excellent.
To your – and it's right near the zoo.
Oh,
okay.
We'll add that too.
Yeah. And the Peter Pan statue in Kensington Gardens. You have to do the Jane Barry thing. You
know? Oh, yes.
I mean, he was Scottish, but.
Mm. Well, that's fine. That's right. That's our connection.
Yes. There you go. So we should remind people that this is Hour of the Wolf over WBAI in New York City, listener-sponsored radio at 99.5 FM. We are listener-sponsored only so long as you call and pledge, 212-209-2950. And we have one person back there answering the phones. Hey, everybody, call at once. You know, he'll put you on hold. He'll take your call, but let's wake him up. 2-1, and you pledge. You know, I'm not doing any of this, you know, crank call stuff. I hear me in delay.
But his influence, you know, is felt far and wide. The next generation of leaders from Mark.
No, he's listening to something. He's not paying any attention to us whatsoever. Listen to that.
It's a tremendous.
Wow. Okay. No, that does it. Call and pledge. Make him pay attention to what's on the bleeping air. 212-209-2950. How dare he work on his own programs and stuff like that? but you at home, pay attention to this program. If you'd like to call up and speak, with Susan and Clay. I'm still willing to entertain calls as long as you are relevant to our topics at hand at 212-209-2900. And we have, can you believe it, you know, 20 minutes left, 15 minutes when you include the outro music. So we need your calls to pledge, and we invite your calls to speak to this morning's guest. So get those phones ringing. Good morning. You're on the radio.
Good morning. And I'm just going to ask Clay, I'm going to ask Clay two questions, and I'll let them go, please. What is the time period for your vampire empire?
2020. You weren't listening.
I told you I missed the first hour and a half. I apologize.
So I should suffer?
No, you shouldn't suffer. You should live till 140 or 150.
Okay, I should say that, but we're of Yom Kippur. But,
yeah,
okay.
57, 72. Anyway, Clay, what is the time period?
Well, as he says, it takes place in the year 2020, but because of the alternate history event, which occurred in 1870, where the vampires destroyed the industrial world, technology is basically at a Victorian level.
Roughly. This almost sounds like an analog to S.M. Sterling's Raj British Empire serial, you know, with the disaster with the meteor hitting Europe.
Yeah, similar.
There's
okay.
a resonance.
Second question. You mentioned the frontier. What frontier? The American West?
The frontier between human-occupied territory in the tropics and vampire-controlled territory, which shifts, of course, with the season and the cold and the heat.
What does the U.S. look like, especially out west?
The American West, well, it's largely unpopulated. The vampires would probably have paid little attention to the Native Americans who were still there.
They might have got along with them, actually.
Possibly.
Lots of traditions out there.
They're not going to get along with any human.
Oh.
They're going to, because they're nothing but food to them. But vampires, particularly after the Great Killing, tend to congregate in cities because they can control their food source greater. So people who are more nomadic or more spread out could be a bit more free of vampire predation.
What a lovely historical touch.
What's
your blog again, please?
Clay and Susan Griffith.
blogspot.com.
Bye.
I should learn what my blog is.
Yeah, well, it's a long one. It's a long one.
Yeah, that's a problem when you're Clay and Susan Griffith. You don't know what the, you
it's
know.
It's a problem with blogs.
Well, that's true. We need a regular website.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we'll be working on that soon.
Yeah, okay, good. I design websites, by the way.
Oh, okay.
Good to know.
But there's not an easy way to describe Vampire Empire. I don't want to use the M word. That would be mashup.
Mm, right.
Because it isn't. It isn't. It simply resonates from so many sources. Before Susan was saying, I think we were talking off the air, saying that you listen to a lot of world music.
Yeah, I'm very eclectic in my taste in music and in literature. And all that has sort of, you know,
bled over.
Exactly. Yeah, I don't want to use the pun, but it's absolutely true.
It has bled over into your writing.
Exactly. And Clay and I are both. We both have our likes and dislikes as well. And we've blended all those likes into the book as, you know, as we're writing, we're going, oh, you know, it'd be cool if we added some of this in this piece of history, or we're going to add this, and this is a great example of this particular author. You know, I mean, in terms of building something brand new, we want to, you know, and what better product you could develop is to do something you're all passionate about.
Yeah.
You know, and a lot of these things that come up in the book, both the politics, the world building, the characters, this is all stuff that we love, and that's why, you know, we were excited to be working on something like this, and why it's getting such, you know, getting well received out there, I think, because it's different, you know, than most things.
Yeah, and I was thinking, as you were saying world music, I was thinking, well, world storytelling.
Absolutely.
Because it's the same kind of a thing, where world music can be that some music comes from Ireland. goes to Africa, mm-hmm. goes back to Ireland, and then is sent to the U.S., and somebody does a cover of it. And all these different things are now blended in. And people will say, oh, you're taking this from there, and you're taking, well, no, they're in there. It's a ragu. It's, you
exactly.
know. It has all of these things, but you're it's this. But somehow, when all is said and done, it's come out as a wonderful blend.
Well, both of us were talking a while back, saying that the books these days have been sort of categorized. You know, you have your mystery sections, you have your romance sections, you have your science fiction, fantasy sections. And, you know, and even teen is now sort of separated.
Yeah, YA is this whole.
Exactly. And, you know, we want it, you know, when we were writing, we started realizing that we're branching and mixing. And that's been done before and done very well. But I think that's the, you know, there's an inroad there that I think we're trying to get out of those boxes. And I think, you know, we're doing paranormal romance where people are doing, weird Wests, you know, where you're having fantasy and science fiction in Westerns. So we're mixing things up. And I think that's the direction I think fiction is going. And Vampire Emperor is obviously one of those as well, that we've blended a variety of different things in.
I don't think it wasn't a conscious effort on our part to blend genres. We didn't start off and say, okay, let's write a book that blends genres. How do we do that? We said, let's write a book about this vampire event and how it plays out in the world. And it just naturally blended genres because we come from different genres.
Yeah, and so. we put the likes and, you know, the things that we were passionate about in that story.
When one of you has a feeling that is different from the other of you. I mean, the collaborative process is bad enough when it's two writers who are mailing things to each other, or, you know, like Larry Niven, Jerry Pornell, mm-hmm. or Henry Kuttner and C.L. Moore, who were a husband and wife writing team, of course. But nobody knew that C.L. Moore was a woman, Catherine Moore, because it was that era. So you hid under initials.
Right.
But the collaborative process is never smooth, is it?
No.
No.
No, it's not.
Married or not?
Ours works pretty well, by and large. And we certainly have disagreements about direction and specific inclusions. And you just fight about it. As Susan says, we have strengths and weaknesses, and if she says something about character relationship, I figure she knows what she's talking about and I better listen to her. If I say something about politics or world building, she should listen to me. But even so, you still have to fight it out, and we argue a great deal. It's not all sweetness and light, but it all comes out. As I said last night, this book written by one or the other of us would not be as good as the book is by both of us. It would be different, and it might be its own unique property, but it wouldn't be what we have, and it wouldn't be nearly as good, I believe.
Yeah, and no, it just comes through, as I said, it often happens to me that when I must read a book, and as mentioned, you know, I had to read this because in the back cover it says creator of Hour of the Wolf, Margot Adler. Sometimes it's a task, you know. Sometimes it's I have to read this. I'm going to be interviewing that person. I have to read that book or something like that. And this one, it's just a page-turner.
Well, that's what we wanted. As I've said before, we wanted a page-turner that people would enjoy, but that had characters that would resonate beyond the end of the book, and that's great. It's like any great adventure story. They only work if you really like the characters. You can do the greatest adventure stunts, sets, but if you don't really like the people, you don't have to like them that much. You just have to know a little bit about them. Indiana Jones, we don't know that much about him, but you like him.
And you care about what happens to him.
And you like the relationship. And at the end of the movie, it's a great movie.
Yeah, it does start with the characters, I believe, but then the setting.
Yeah.
Yes.
And then you have your broth, but mm-hmm. it's such a lovely mix.
Thank you.
By the way, I turned around and noticed We've raised more money, so we're now at $239.50, which is, well, in the grand scheme of things, a drop in the bucket. But hey, drops in the bucket are always useful, and you can drop it you like in our bucket at 212-209-2950. $25 makes you a subscriber for the next 10 minutes, 9 minutes only. It ticks away because this is This Morning Only premium for $99.50, but a mere under $100. You can get an autographed copy of either book of Vampire Empire. If you do not specify, you will get The Grey Friar, because it starts there. And for $150, you can get both books. And for $175, you can get both books plus a recording of the event as it occurred last night at the New York Review of Science Fiction Readings. So we have really just 5 minutes left before I have to put on the theme. 3 hours is fast, isn't it?
It was fast.
Yeah, it went way in a blink.
It really does fly. 212-209-2950 is the number to call. Fahrenheit knife.
Right.
The Fahrenheit dagger.
Yes. The dagger, that's right.
Yes.
Good morning, listener. Coming in, getting ready for his show. Burn Baby Burn Clapper coming up in, 9 minutes, 8 minutes. So explain, yes.
Well, again, it's part of the...
I have my mind's eye answer.
Yeah, I can see that. Basically, what it is specifically is just when the humans came and had to get to the equator, they had to get different resources. And the resources that they... One of the resources they turned to away from coal was chemical. And the chemical, it's a Fahrenheit blade, and what happens is when you put it the blade in the scabbard, it's heated up by the chemicals. So it when you turn it, pull the blade out, it is a hot blade. It's a very it's a high temperature.
It's so visual.
Yeah, and it's it's heat is one of those things that is vampires are
they don't enjoy
weak it. Are weakened by. So it's one of those weapons that was developed through that particular resource to fight against the vampires, but
But it also works against people.
Yes, it does. It's a different kind of weaponry that was part of the steampunk and the turning of the world.
Yeah, and I love the imagery as well. It's not that the vampires fly, as you explained last night. They more or less float. They levitate.
They float like dead leaves on the wind.
Yeah, exactly. And it's again. An amazing visual image.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That also actually works with the steampunk imagery. There's actually some good steampunk radio drama being put out by ZBS, that's upstate New York, and they put out some wonderful things. And I can't remember the name of their things, but people can go to just Google up Z as in zebra BS, and you'll find their stuff.
Definitely.
And they have a cover of one of their steampunk adventures that just has like a woman's bloomers are what are raising her into the air while an airship flies by, and I think somebody may be carrying some kind of a dagger, if not a Fahrenheit blade. That's outright comedy, by the way. I should mention that particular radio drama. They're very clever, very good with their stuff.
Yeah, excellent.
But we need to impress upon listeners, with but 2 minutes left, a couple of things. Number one, the name of the book series, Vampire Empire. The authors are Clay Griffith and Susan Griffith. And if you remember that, you can find clayandsusangriffith.blogspot.com. Forget it. Google Clay and Susan Griffith. Or Vampire Empire, for that matter.
Yeah, exactly. Do it too.
And you will find these. Now, you could go to a bookstore or a brick and mortar or virtual and get it, but then you wouldn't be donating to WBAI. And for the next 5 minutes, You could make us all very happy with just a huge donation. It's actually not that huge. To me, it's huge. You know, $175 is a lot of money when you're me. But if you're you, hey, it's just a drop in the bucket, right? No, I know it's something, but WBAI needs your support. Hour of the Wolf needs your support, because we need to show to the radio station that arts programming is something that you want more of on the station. And the way we do that is if they say, hey, Jim, you can do a 3-hour show, I say, look, and look at all the money I raised. Not. So, your call can still help that, 212-209-2950. And for $175, I'm just cutting to the quick here, we'll give you, it's called The Whole Shebang. Google that and see where it gets you. But what you will get are both books of The Vampire Empire and the recording of the Vampire Empire event held last night in Soho. Nothing else offhand. Do you have anything else that you need to tell people to go to or do or enjoy? No,
we have a Facebook page.
Yes, that's right.
And it's facebook.com / Vampire Empire, all one word. Feel free to come
that's
on.
Easier than the blog.
I think it is too. And they can.
It means you have to go to Facebook.
Well, yeah, but hopefully it's a public site, so you can leave a message and start a conversation. And
you can actually participate without joining Facebook.
I believe so, isn't it?
I'm not sure. They're starting to do that, but I'm not sure about that.
I don't know, to tell you the truth.
Yeah. Facebook is very, well, sticky, meaning it's proprietary. It leads people in, lets you check in, but doesn't let you check out.
Well, I thought you could, but maybe I'm wrong. I'm not that techie.
Well, but everybody's on Facebook, so, yeah. Give in.
You can certainly view it.
Yeah. Exactly. I think that's more the case.
Yeah,
you can view it.
I think so. But you can also view the book in a bookstore, on Amazon, Barnes & Noble, unfortunately not Borders, but there's lots of places. Or you can donate to WBAI and get a copy. So, thank you, Susan and Clay. Thank you for staying over in New York another day and for the people that made it possible.
Thank you. Yes. It was our pleasure.
Absolutely.
And thank you, listeners, for listening. And those who pledged, again, thank you. And those who didn't, you will. We go out with Steel Eye Span as always, and I will be back on the air with, I don't know. Actually, I do know. I'm going to be on the air Saturday the 12th from 6 to 8 a.m. Filling in for I Don't Know What and Simon Locally. So I'll talk to you all then, and in the meantime, take care. Have a wonderful week. Good morning. Stay tuned for Burn Baby Burn. Clapper with Lister. Coming your way on these same airwaves.
No, my dad. said with the last words on my lips, I am a revolutionary. And you're going to have to keep on saying that. You're going to have to say that I am a proletarian. I am
a fascist. The red, white, and blue spit on you.
Thank you very much, Jim Frank. 1996.
The red, white, the blue, I'm not Captain America. Too black, too strong, causing mass hysteria. Trying to reach my freedom of speech and expressing myself, torching the symbol of oppression. Let that be a lesson to those that want suppression of the truth. Put on hold, the bold lose control, so they force obedience. Have you pledge allegiance to a piece of cloth? That's all the way I see it. While I'm going off berserk, cause the system work to jerk. My people, the people, all around the pigs lurk. Tell me I'm wrong, though, that's my right. Constitution, yo, that's an illusion, huh? Suckers trying to change and rearrange. They say that I'm free, but they sure have a strange way of showing it. But I'm blowing the cover, the red, white, the blue, but the black for the brother. And I'm no lover of this flag, like many others take the same turn, like me, they yearn for the flag too.
Just a mother minute. You gave me freedom of speech in the First Amendment. So I want 99.5 FM, WBAI, 5 minutes after 3 o'clock right here at 99 Sinker, Lister Live. This is the Begathon until 5 o'clock. We got to raise like $2,000 real quick right here at 99 Sinker, 212-209-2900. You gotta do it right here. 212-209-2900 right here. And what we're gonna do right here is we're gonna ask that you take time out right here and call, because we have some super duper premiums right here. For example, for example, this is how we're going to kick it off. With $150 strong, Rick Wolf's speech at Berkeley Hillside Club, January 16. That's January 16, 2011. Capitalism Hits the Fan, the book by Richard W. Wolf. An Evening with Richard Wolf, the combination, $150 right here. 212-209-2900. The blue card, the green card, the yellow card, we take it all here. The master, you know, the visa and all of that, it goes straight into the coffers of 99 Sinker. This is listener-sponsored, non-commercial radio station right here at 212-209-2950. That's the number. We have a brother, a big fan of Burn Baby Burn, happening to pick up the phones when you call 212-209-2900. Now, you're financially challenged, or you got head busted last night, but you wanna because of the pigs, what they did. Speaking about the pigs, you know what they did to me? They almost locked me up coming down to BAI. Guess what? I got out of the subway, normally walked exactly where I was walking, and they wanted to lock me up. You know, I mean, I don't know what's going on. The whole place down here is a garrison of pigs. I mean, it's a disgrace. You got all this Yankee doodoo on the ground. Why don't they shovel that up instead of trying to arrest me coming to 120 Wall Street to do this radio show? And let me tell you something. Had they jumped in me and locked me up, you wouldn't know. I would just be one of those, not disappeared, but vanished for like almost 24 hours or more, right? 212-209-2950. That's Lister's social security number right here. 212-209-2950. A great heavy lifting job by Jim Freund right here. The Hour of the Wolf. Ow! All right. 212-209-2950. Robert Knight doing the heavy lifting right here. 12 midnight on a Thursday until 1:30 when Jim kicks it in. Then comes Burn Baby Burn. Then comes at 5 o'clock. Free Speech Radio, News, Al Jazeera, the combination, just before 6 o'clock with a brand new Wake Up Call. And Wake Up Call is going to be having some very interesting premiums. For example, John Henry Clark, you can get it here, the DVD for $75. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. We got to do it right here. Can I have 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 telephone calls coming in here right now. 212-209-2950. We're in fundraiser mode, and you know this is real critical for us to keep this going beyond the 51 years that we've been doing it right here at community listener sponsored non-commercial radio, the vanguard of the Pacifica situation right here at 99 Sinker, Lister Live. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Let me repeat myself like a broken record. The Rick Wolf speech at Berkeley Hillside Club that happened on the 16th of January this year. An Evening with Richard Wolf, the CD. You can get that for $60. The book, Capitalism Hits the Fan by Richard Wolf. Ooh, $100. And let me tell you something. If you're $25 short because you just don't have the $100, if you call right now at 212-209-2950, I have personally put up out of my pocket that has a big hole in it. $50 matching fund. From last time we did this, I put up 100. Nobody took it, so this time you better take it. Come on. $150 for the full combination of the Rick Wolf speech at Berkeley, California. If you're $25 short with your $150, the person who picks up the phone in the tally room will just rip off $25 of their $50 matching fund, put on top of yours $125, making it $150, so that you can get the full combination of the whole package of the Richard Wolf speech. It's amazingly good, especially with these pigs down here cracking people's heads, because these people are in the streets trying to make sure that the pigs get their pension, but they bust the heads of those people. That's the contradiction that's happening down in the belly of the beast world of the capitalist world right here. 212-209-2950. We're not going to move. We're not going to budge. Matter of fact, we're going to stop the music. We got to get a telephone call right now. Make it 6. Telephone calls at 212-209-2950. Beg your pardon. 212-209-2950. We have to get this really going. Jim did a great job. Robert Knight did a great job. It's our turn to burn, baby, burn Wall Street right here in the heart of the occupation of Wall Street right here. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Let's do this. Let's do this. 6 telephone calls right here at $25 would do the trick. And like I said, if you're short $25, just tell Tally, pick up. Yo, this is me. I'm calling 212-209-2950. I'm a little bit short here. Can you help me out with that matching fund thing? Can you sprinkle a little dollars over here? Like I said, the Richard Wolf speech is really a good combination, the DVD and his book, for $150. Now, you're not going to get this bargain when you listen to, Hugh Hamilton. Ain't nobody going to put no $25 on top of your $125 because you're $25 short just to get this $150 premium stuff here to keep WBAI going. And when you listen to Democracy Now, you think they're going to give you a break? You get in the break right here. All you folks who call up BAI and say, some of them premiums too expensive. This is a time that you get to burn, baby, burn, and show your support right here. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. All right, let's get it going right now. $150 would get us off this zero hump right here. All right. 212-209-2950. Do I see the telephones ringing? 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Burn, baby, burn, clappers. 13 minutes after 3 o'clock.
I am the material of the imperialist in a blazing inferno. Cause my heart is internal. The American dream, a nightmare. I want the people to wake up to the lies the pigs make up. Imperialistic swans that I grind into bacon bits. Call the fist cause I ain't taking shit. I'm not a Nazi or a Cappy or a Farmy, but you want me in prison cause I'm messy attack. I rag it and snag it and drag it and rip it to shreds. Cause I'm too black, too strong, too red, too dread. And I'm dreaded cause I make the pigs tremble when I burn a symbol. Yo, I'm quick and nimble like Jack, but I'm a black man attacking the flag. I keep my torch handy, I'm no Yankee Doodle Dandy. So just hand me a flag from the fascist and watch me burn that piece of to ashes. Cause the real meaning is what the masses must learn. That's why the red, white, and blue must burn, baby, burn.
Yo, 212-209-2900, 212-212-209-2950, my mistake, 212-209-2950, that's the number, 212-209-2950, if you call the other number, you won't get nobody, but if you call 212-209-2950, tell them, yo, take something out of that match in front, I want to get that Rick Wolf speech right here at 212-209-2950. Let's kick it off with Aswad out of the ghetto in London, England, where the occupation of Wall Street has spread to London, England. It has spread to Sydney. It's going right around the world, y'all. Right here at WBAI 99 Cinco. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. Let's do it.
You're gonna have to said I am a proletarian.
The red, white, and blue spit on you.
All right, here we go. 212-209-2950. Now, one of the reasons why we do have this fundraiser is, for example, none of these CD players are working. And I've always done the magical thing of doing an entire radio show with just one CD player. We can do it, and you won't even know the difference, right? 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. That's the number to get this thing going right here at 212-209-2950. Do help us out with a telephone call right now. We need three more telephone calls right here at 212-209-2950. Now, we're going to do the show with just one CD player working. Why? Because the other two ain't working. Why? Because you didn't pledge to the station. Why? Because you didn't pick up the phone. So do it right now. 212-209-2950. Help the situation.
Instead of talking heavy on the bus and stirring up the nation, I know that the love is overdue, but what are we supposed to do? Give thanks to the Father up above for giving us this time to love, love, love. And you're fighting. No bother with it now. No bother with you fussing and you're fighting. But if only we could find a way to say the right things all of the time, then you and I could see it through the blue, this hard and perilous time. I'm saying that if all of us unite, we could live a hell of a life. If only our love don't fail. Hear me, oh hear me now. Don't bother with it. Don't bother with your fussing and your fighting. Won't get in no way, so don't bother with it. Don't bother with your fussing and your fighting.
From London, England, right here with Aswad. Was hard and stiff and could have never missed. 212-209-2950. Help the situation out, right out, right now, right out here. Wall Street, burn, baby, burn, Wall Street. 212-209-2950. Do it! Hey, we need three telephone calls at $100 right here at 212-209-2950. 20 minutes after the hour, 20 minutes after 3 o'clock in New York, New York, so wicked, you had to name it twice. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950. This kind of music, where else are you going to get it? But WBAI, y'all. 212-209-2950.
Hi, I'm Earth Mom.
I'm Cookie.
I'm Andrew.
And we all have something in common.
We all volunteer for the WBAI Fund Drive.
And you can too.
Because the next WBAI Fund Drive begins on October 5th.
And volunteers are needed 24/7.
To volunteer, call 212-209-2800 Monday through Friday, 9 to 5 p.m. Or email volunteers@wbai.org. And please bring your photo ID when you come to the station at 120 Wall Street.
Come on and join us.
And keep your favorite radio station alive and thriving. Call 212-209-2800 or email volunteers@wbai.org.
TalkBack is your gathering place for the free and fair exchange of information and ideas heard here Monday through Thursday from 3 until 5 in the afternoon. I'm Hugh Hamilton. Join me as we explore the issues and events making news across the nation and around the world with expert guests, insightful analysis, and, of course, your comments, questions, and observations. That's TalkBack right here on WBAI New York.
My name is Dan Ingram, and I'm a WBAI fan. They've always been, you know, the station that kicked butt and the station that said what you're not supposed to say because the people in power don't want to hear it, and I love that.
I have to celebrate you, baby.
Thank you very much, Dan Ingram. Dan Ingram, would you believe the pigs wanted to lock up Lister coming down to WBAI? The garrison of pigs down here is a disgrace. All this donkey doodle on the ground and all that stuff, damn. So, I would have not been the disappeared but the vanished, and you would not know where I was. This is Burn Baby Burn Wall Street, in the heart of the occupation of Wall Street, Steel Pulse. Yo, listen, we need some telephone calls right here in the heart of the occupation of Wall Street. Burn, baby, burn. Wall Street. List alive. 99 Sinker. 212-209-2950. Gotta overthrow this imperialist system.
Bruce.
Yes, I am. How are we gonna do it?
Bruce.
Burn, baby, burn, yeah.
Bruce.
99 Sinker, list alive. Burning the American flag with Bruce. No apology. Until 5 o'clock, to ashes.
Harassment is the mark of the beast in the struggle. The hands of the enemy, the middle of the hassle. Blessed I'm bound to be if I bear out the battle. Give them the power to bring back the shackles. So I got to overthrow the struggle.
Harassment.
Got to overthrow the struggle. Got to overthrow the struggle.
Harassment.
Got to overthrow.
Overthrow.
Captured by command of corrupt
99 Sinker List Alive, dedicating this to all the youths, the proletariat youths, fighting the pigs tonight at the demonstration. Got the heads busted unnecessarily by the pigs. You know it go already, right? We gotta fight them tonight, and win this in a Burn Baby Burn style, y'all. Got to overthrow this imperialist system. Ain't got no choice. Pablo Moses, y'all. Ain't got no choice. Pablo Moses right here in the heart of the occupation of the capitalist Wall Street. We say Burn Baby Burn Wall Street.
Here in Jamaica, it's a shame. My papa destroying our culture by killing one another away from the gates of Africa, giving way to the intruder. I said we should be in Angola. Oh yes, my brothers now, we should be in Angola. Oh yes, my sisters, do drive away the intruders, I say, from the land of our forefathers, I pray. My brother destroying our culture by killing one another away from the gates of Africa, giving way to the intruder. I said we should be in Angola. Oh yes, my brothers now, we should be in Angola. Oh yes.
Come on, 12 tribe of Israel, go to Jamaica.
Yo, 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 we can't keep doing this right here without no telephone calls keeping us going right here at 212-209-2950. Baby, baby, baby. Burn, baby, burn. Clappers, burn Wall Street right here at 212-209-2950. In the heart of the occupation of Wall Street. 212-209-2950. You know, burn, baby, burn has been spitting it in your face, saying, rip off what they're doing in Greece on the streets. Bring it to the heart of the imperialist America and do your thing right here. You don't know my name. My name is Burn, Baby Burn, Wall Street. Clappers, 3 o'clock until we finish burn the American imperialist flag, y'all. Why is it that these demonstrations, you don't see them burning the American flag? You tell me right here, 212-209-2950. We got the premiums, y'all. 212-209-2950, Alicia Keys and her J.A., Jamaican DNA, y'all. Listen to this. Listen to this. Mix Melissa. Yo, Rastesfa, I saw you on PBS News. Rastesfa was hanging out in a place called the Occupation of Wall Street right here at Burn Baby Burn. Clappers, Rastesfa, where you say? Yeah, 212-209-2950. Saw him on the PBS News, y'all. Rastesfa, man. So we're all the reggae artists. We're all the reggae artists. Went down there looking for reggae artists at the Occupation of Wall Street. We all are all the reggae artists. Where you there? Where you there? Where you there?
Marcus Garvey words come to pass.
Yo, listen up, all them reggae artists. This is the opportunity for you to come down to Wall Street and burn, baby, burn, clappers style. No reggae show gonna tell you that. Do you have a conscience? Use it, y'all.
Marcus Garvey words come to pass. Marcus Garvey words come to pass. Ain't got no food to eat. Ain't got no money.
Yo, meet me at the corner of Wall Street and burn, baby, burn, y'all. 212-209-2950. 212-209-2950 is the number. And we got the premiums. We got the premiums. Yo, listen up. We're going to have to hold down on this music thing right here. Yo, pull on the music because nobody in our car. Scene 212-209-2950. Now, the Rick Wolf speech will put you on track to why we have to do this thing and spread it all over the world. Scene, what we're talking about? Yo, you go up against the system, you overthrow it because you have no choice. I said on this radio show that when you get behind His Imperialist Majesty Barack the First in the White House and your hearts are all broken, then it's time to burn, baby, burn, and you come to your senses. So something is happening right here in the streets right here at the corner of Liberty and Broadway. And it's just a start, you know, like a starter, like when you're starting your engines. Yeah, and it's spreading all over the world. It's in London, England. We're going to go down to Jamaica and see what they're doing on the streets of Jamaica, if they are occupying Wall Street all the way down in Kilsom, J.A. with Lloyd D. Aguilar. 212-209-2950. We're going to go to London, England, try and catch David Katz. Fortunately, he was away because his father passed away. And our condolences to the Katz family and Claudia in London, England. 212-209-2950. Like I said, if you're a first-time caller, first-time listener to 99 Sinker WBAI, the thing to do is to become a winner. This is how you win. You give up $25. And if you don't have it, you can take 25 months to pay it. You can cut a deal right here. And if you're short $5 with your $25, making you a first-time premium listener, joining the station as I refer to you right here humbly, then you can say to the tally room, hey, Lister says there's a floating $50 right here as a poor people's matching fund, you know, from the heart of the occupation of Wall Street right here, 212-209-2950. Give me $5 out of that on top of my $20. Make me a first-time premium member right here at 212-209-2950 Pacifica Radio WBAI. We can do much better than this in the past 51 years. We can pump it up to another level, to another volume right here for more than 51 years. 212-209-2950. The best of the best of globalizing protests right here at 212-209-2950. You know that we've been doing this for over 51 years, and you just calling up for the first time, never too late, just never too late. 212-209-2950. We're doing the show on just one Dada CD player, and you won't even know the difference. 212-209-2950. Can I get 5 telephone calls at $60 so that you can each get the rich Rick Wolf speech from June 16th in Berkeley, California. 212-209-2950. Listen, if you're short, we'll make it long. Yo, in Belfast, everybody know we were the first to play this record. Joel Chin, who got murdered in Kilson, Jamaica, gave it to Lista right here at Burn Baby Burn. In less than 24 hours after it was recorded in Kilson, Jamaica. And you heard it here first, Sinead O'Connor, y'all.
Come little one, oh, let me do what I can for you. And you, and you alone. Come little one, come, oh. Let me do what
Joel Chin's
I can
favorite artist right here at 99 Sinker. He got murdered. One bullet to the head and killed some J.A. And you didn't know. Now you know. 212-209-2950. Be a first-time member. Call up and get a premium now. Do it.
Shall be spanked with many stripes.
My brethren in the tally room is dancing and shaking his head and say, come on, people. Burn, baby, burn at 212-209-2950. Burn, baby, burn, Wall Street, clapper style. Come on, let's do it.
Tell her to do right. Beg her to do right. Oh.
Thank you very much, Sinead O'Connor, right here at 212-209-2950. Thank you very much, Sinead O'Connor. 212-209-2950 right here. And we're going to play this record by the lead singer from the group called The Pioneers. Just read from the New York Times that the lead singer just passed away in Kilson, Jamaica. The Pioneers right here. Long shot, kick the bucket. Dedicating this to the Midnight Ravers. Yeah. Great lead singer from the Pioneers just passed away. Terry Wilson, this is for you. Check it out.
Get up,
99 single, Dennis Al Capone, yeah. I try to get Chuck D from Public Enemy, Lister, Dennis Al Capone, and Flavor Flav. And take a picture of that and call it Public Enemy number one, numero uno. Yo, 212-209-2950. Let's not fantasize, let's face reality, merciless realist. 46 minutes after 3 o'clock, we gotta go catch David Katz in London, England, Lloyd D. Aguilar. If we can raise $600 in 5 minutes right here with 6 telephone calls, $100 each, you get that book, that Wolf book, Richard D. Wolf's Capitalism Hits the Fan right here at Burn Baby Burn, Wall Street. Burn Baby Burn, Clappers right here at 212-209-2950. Dennis Al Capone, thanks very much. This is the Begathon. Yo, heavy lifting time right here. Make it 46 minutes after 3 o'clock. Dedicating this to Robert Knight, yo. It's heavy lifting time. Robert Knight did his thing right here at 12 midnight. Heavy lifting time, Jim Freund. Yes, I am. Now it's Burn Baby Burn's time to do the heavy lifting time. 212-209-2950. The Richard Wolf Premium is available now. '99 Cinco on a Sabado. Tony. Wicked show on a Saturday. You know what I'm talking about? Tony Ryan, y'all. 212-209-2950. The combination right here at 99 Cinco List Alive. Yeah. Liquid Sound Lounge. Midnight Ravers. After Selassie. Labrish. You cannot get better than that. Because this is Pacifica at its best. 212-209-2950. Heavy lifting time. 48 minutes after 3 o'clock. Ow! Help me. Heavy. This is what Lister is known for, playing all the reggae music they refuse to play on the reggae show. This is HR. Shame them in the game. 212-209-2950. Be pumped with me, y'all. Fight back, we can win this. The pigs were a disgrace last night, busting the heads of my brethren and my sisters down here at Liberty and Broadway, y'all. The demonstration, damn, attacked by the pigs, y'all. We gotta fight back, we can win this. 212-209-2950. It should have been 100,000 people down here occupying Wall Street. Burn, baby, burn. Wall Street, y'all, clappers. We need 2 telephone calls right here at $50. Let's do it, y'all. Shame them in the game, y'all. In the streets of Greece, we are shaming them in the capitalist game, y'all. Yo, in London, England, we're shaming them in the game, y'all. Listen why.
Shame in the game. Incisive denial. When these exchange their dreams for flame. Now mercy.
Hey, don't let Lister hang, come on. I know you're feeling me hard and stiff, could I never miss y'all. 212209 2950. Shame them in the game, come on. HR, human rights, y'all. 212-209-2950. We can do this burn, baby burn style. Clap us, doy.
No mercy on Jaja Big Maya. It's that you don't like. Oh, why? Cause you the one, you just the one to try. Rivers up here, drop force. Still, you don't keep your laws. As on your brandy, just like.
Aya, aya. Hell yeah. This is the No God Zone, y'all. Shame them in the game, a capitalist game. We can win this, Baba Bacon style. 212-209-2950. Hey, 54 minutes after 3 o'clock, burn baby burn time, y'all. Burn baby burn, Wall Street clappers, list alive. 212-209. We need two more telephone calls right here to keep this going right here. The flickering. Light up the rays at the end of the tunnel. I can smell the weed. Yes, I am. We can do this burn baby burn style. Shame them in the game, y'all. 212-209-2950. 51 years of doing this, we can do better than this. Come on, take it to the next level.